are delighted to be back in our continuing series right here on the Branson Podcast Network as we share the stories of everyday heroes, the career decisions, and so much more. An insightful look inside the life of our heroes, the emergency worker, right here on the Branson Podcast Network. It is the heart of the Emergency Worker Podcast series. This is episode 3. It is presented and powered by Arvest Bank. And I am Josh Grisham, joined in studio by my co-host, the amazing Pamela Yancey. My dear, it's so good to be back in the studio with you, continuing our series. Can you believe it? 3 episodes in.
I know. I'm so excited, Josh. And we're just hearing a lot of really great response from people. And so we're so excited to be able to partner with you and do this and really put the spotlight on our everyday frontline emergency workers that go out and do so many great things in our community and oftentimes putting their lives on the line in order to help protect and save folks in our community. So it's exciting to be here, and I'm looking forward to this podcast.
I certainly am. And I tell you what, it really just goes to show you that the machine, the lives of the emergency worker is multifaceted. It is tenfold. We have got a community that grows by leaps and bounds every yes. single year. And the stories that we've told so far through the first 2 episodes, we tackled the bio, the life, the career of Ted Martin in our mm-hmm. opening episode. And then we went right to the front lines, right inside Liberty Utilities. And our frontline workers that are out there working to restore power, even in the harshest of conditions, tying that into the Joplin tornado and more. And that is how impactful these stories are. It's the unsung heroes. We don't have an opportunity to hear or know what's going on in the day to day. But you take those 2 things. You think about fire. You think about power, Liberty Utilities, workers that are out there working to restore power. Alongside that, another part of this foundation, another part of this story is the first responders,
yes.
the ambulance district, and those that work tirelessly, long days that we can't even imagine. They are tired to fire, theft, loss, accidents all across the community. And Pam, we have a very, very special guest representing the Taney County Ambulance District. I feel like I know him already because he's part of the family. Pam, we're proud to welcome to this episode, number 3, as we talk to Taney County Ambulance District, Jonathan Tudor. Jonathan, hey, welcome to the studio, my friend, and thank you for saying yes to be a part of this wonderful series. It's glad to have you.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
And Pam, I think about this. Really, the first question that would come to mind is Jonathan, sir, before you got involved with Taney County Ambulance District, I'd like to go back to the beginning a little bit. In your family history, did you have anybody before you that worked in ambulances? Where did your influence come, and when did work with the district really get started for you?
I don't have anyone in my family.
Oh,
that,
wow.
Did any medical or EMS, emergency services of any type, nothing like that. It's
okay.
So I'm kind of the first.
You're the very first in the family to get started.
My little brother did follow in my footsteps. He's a
right
deputy
on.
Sheriff. In Texas.
So, okay.
But I got started in the ambulance about 21 years ago in 2002.
In 2002.
When I started for TCAD.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so in 2002. Now this prompts a logical question from me, my friend. Back in 2002 when you got started, how young were you? What age when you got into ambulance district? We're doing the math right now.
Whatever 41 minus 21 is.
41 minus 21.
20.
So that
was 20 years old.
20 years old. So when you made the decision to go into the ambulance district, did you have any insight, whether it was for close friends that made a job recommendation to you? Did you have any insight before you chose to serve within TCAD about what the day-to-day operation was going to be like and what the unforeseen challenges were going to be? Did you have any insight in advance before you made the decision?
Not really.
Okay.
So most of my, insight into what ambulances did.
Yeah.
It's Hollywood.
Okay. That's watching any big Hollywood movie,
that's what
right?
you see on TV.
And, okay.
Hey, I would like to do that. And, and there's a very small amount of Hollywood that does happen.
Yeah.
But 99% of it is not.
Okay. Did you learn that in year 1 or did that happen in like year 2 or year 3?
I've continued to learn.
Okay.
It's a continuous learning process, and it's been very enjoyable.
Excellent.
Working for the ambulance. I very much enjoy being a paramedic. I love the job. It has a lot of challenges to it,
mm-hmm.
but it is also a very rewarding career. There is, especially in the medical side.
Okay.
Who there's no other medical worker, you know, a doctor, a nurse, the dentist. Mm-hmm. There is no other medical service that when you're injured or ill, you invite that person into your house, your most sacred place.
Yeah.
At the worst time, you invite them in to take care of you. That's an honor that we have as paramedics.
And, you know, you talk about the honor. And, Pam, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Jonathan. I mean, he framed that very, very well.
He did, yes.
Jonathan, we're talking about an immense level of vulnerability for somebody that is in need. And that's a very big deal. And that doesn't go unnoticed and unrecognized in your field.
Absolutely. You know, people don't call us on their best day. Yeah. You know, I've never had anyone call me and tell me they got a good mortgage rate.
Oh my
just
word.
Doesn't happen.
Unless
they call us on our worst, on their worst day.
Oh.
And we show up at the worst time. And the worst situation is different for some people.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we have to learn as paramedics is no matter what is going on for us, you know, we may see it as not that big of an emergency.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
That patient, that is the worst day for them.
Okay.
They got to the point that they couldn't figure it out. They could not control the problem, couldn't control the emergency, and they had to let someone else step in and take over for them. Wow. And we were the ones honored to do that. So we come in and take care of them for that. We stop the emergency. We stop whatever the problem is, and then we start fixing it from there.
You've got to... At the age of 20, and this is going to bring a whole new circle of questions. I guess that's why I work in radio, because I think of all kinds of things that spawn from different responses and reactions. But I want to ask you, at 20, it's a whole different thing for me, but I think about people that make the decision to go and serve in the military, no matter what branch it is. Serving in the ambulance district, to me, can be on the same level, but for different reasons. At a young age, I think it takes a very special person, a very unique mindset to get ready to do something like that. I'm not talking war, but when you talk about cases, vulnerability, going into different homes, different situations, the volume of calls in a day, what I would get curious about is you see a different kind of trauma. And oftentimes it's repetitive trauma, depending upon the type of calls that come back to back in a given day. If I can ask you, day one, How did you develop the mindset? How did you get yourself ready mentally to tackle something like this? If I can ask, I mean, how do you get in that right mindset to do this?
You know, when I first started on the ambulance, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The call volume was a lot lower.
Okay.
You know, just to put it in perspective, when I started, we only had four ambulances. There's three ambulances at night, four during the day. We run seven trucks now.
And that's Branson.
There are days
that
we need more trucks.
Oh,
you know,
my
so
gosh.
Our call volume has expanded dramatically. But you know, getting into that mindset, you have to you just mentally prepare yourself. And you know, and looking back when I was 20, you know, and working on the ambulance, it was, you know, a siren and a 16,000-pound truck, and I get to drive down the middle lane of the strip, and you don't.
Yeah,
you know,
it
was adrenaline,
and
that quickly wore off. And became much more of a medical side of, wow, I get to help these people.
Yeah.
You know, and being able to take care of people and step in their time of need and help them. That's what really touched me and really hooked me into, you know what, this is the career that I want to stick around in.
Yeah.
And I see that in the young people now that are coming along. You know,
does it take you back 20 years when you're riding along with somebody and it is their first day or their first week? It's got to just jolt you right back to day one and essentially give you a fountain of youth, if you will. You go right back to the beginning of your journey.
It is. It's awesome to see the next generation of paramedics behind me coming up and to watch that transition and remember, oh, I remember that day.
Yeah.
I remember the day that clicked in my head. And, oh, this is what we do for a living.
Yeah.
And to watch them go through that is very exciting. It's fun to watch.
I would imagine for you, it's also a plus. It's a win for you in your career as you firmly established yourself. When you're helping out the young cadets, the people that are working on the ambulance for their first week, their first day, they have that first visit, that first service that they're working on. And I don't know, just I guess, rebuilt and rebuff a crack in a foundation, an emotional crack. And you're saying, you know what? It's okay. This is not going to be your first. This is not going to be your last. You can get in there and you can do this. I can't imagine what a rush that is. Absolutely. When you have to go back and build somebody else up on your team.
It is. It's great to see the new people coming in and to help build them up, as well as to help them learn from things that we've done.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, one of the things you were talking about was the repetitive trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
So post-traumatic stress syndrome is something that has been studied for decades.
Yeah.
It started off, World War II, World War I, II era, and it was shell shock syndrome.
Shell shock syndrome.
And now it's, the studies have come along and we figured out that, this is post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, that research is getting down, out of the military and into civilian world to find out that happens to others.
Yeah.
And post-traumatic stress is something that can very much happen to firefighters, paramedics, some of the stuff we see.
And is it fair of me to say that's not often talked about? If somebody in your field is suffering from that, and here's the thing, that's why Pam and I came together to talk about this. I mean, yes, the heroics, and we'll get to that, but bringing the community into the life, because we don't see it. If you're not talking about it, you probably would never know.
Absolutely. And it's exciting to see that not only the research is catching up, but the legislation is catching up. There's actually a bill that was passed this year and it's sitting on the governor's desk. Hopefully he'll sign it here in the next few weeks that puts PTSD as part of a workman's comp issue.
That's
that we can
fabulous.
Get the help we need and get the help for these folks, and we see a lot of stuff. When I'd go do I do a lot of the high schools and stuff like that. You go talk to the
doing the
to
career
the kids.
Days.
Career
yes.
days, yes, uh-huh. sir. I'm sorry, I forgot. Career days. One of the big questions I get asked all the time is, hey, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And usually my answer to them is, if I was completely honest with you mm-hmm. and told you some of the worst things I've ever seen, you wouldn't sleep tonight. I know, because I've seen them, and there's nights I don't sleep.
Oh my gosh, Jonathan. Wow.
We see that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started 20 years ago, it was, just push it down, push it back to the back of your head. It'll go away. Don't worry about it. You don't need to talk about it.
Ignore it.
It doesn't go away, though, does it?
And we've learned that you don't ignore it. It doesn't go away. It'll come back and bite you.
Yeah.
So now we're able to get the help. We've got community support teams.
Yeah.
We've got peer support teams, the ambulance district,
mm-hmm.
All the local fire departments, Branson, Western, all the fire departments in the county, even on the east side, Central, Pro-Tem, those guys.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff's department, police departments, they're all in together as a peer support team. So if we have an incident anywhere in the county
mm-hmm.
that people are having a hard time with,
mm-hmm.
we got one phone number we can call. And there is one of those peer support people that's on duty 24 hours a day. And if you call today, maybe it's one of the paramedics that's on. Or maybe it's one of the deputies. It just depends on who's on that day. But that person takes charge and they coordinate that team. They get that team of peer support together and we take care of that person. And we make sure that they're going to be okay mentally, physically, emotionally, and they're going to be able to continue in their career and not let this trauma build. And that is one of the things that I've seen. If you ask me what's the coolest thing in 20 years I've seen on the ambulance, that's one of them.
That's amazing.
There's all kinds of technology that's come along. I can talk to you for hours about the technology on the ambulances.
I bet you anything we're going to circle around to that. But, Pam, we're three episodes in and 14 minutes into this particular episode, those that are listening to us on Branson Podcast Network. Why is it that I'm continuously wowed by these stories? We're not even into the meat of this conversation yet, and I'm floored.
Again, it's the things that we don't think about as citizens because we're not doing your job, right? We just see the ambulance going down the road with the, little lights and stuff, whatever.
Yeah, that's all we see.
But, not thinking about how you have to deal with that. And kudos to our community for all of you for banding together, for recognizing this is an issue. We've got to be supportive of our folks. We've got to help you get that help you need. And in banding together, really band of brothers and sisters, right, that's looking out for each other, family, looking out after family. You know, we think about, you know, maybe an ambulance going somewhere, somebody fell and broke leg, whatever, you got to get them. But I think about, you know, when my father, before he passed away, and he fell, he had early onset dementia, and so he fell several times and hit his head, and you know, the ambulance that had to show up to make the assessment to see whether he needed to go on, and just the compassion that they had for my dad, and you know, and but keeping being professional and keeping the focus on we got to do what's right for the patient, right?
Yeah,
but
totally.
What other people maybe that haven't experienced it is you have to deal with emotional family members too, right? You've got to be, you got to show sympathy. You've got to be that encouragement. We're going to take the very best care of your loved one. We'll make sure that we'll get him there. And so it's not just also caring for the patient, but it's also making sure that the family members feel like they're sending their loved one off with someone that they can trust, right? And I go back to a friend of mine many years ago. His wife had some conditions and stuff, and we were talking about one of the ambulance workers, and he made a comment. He said, he has seen my family through the worst days of our lives. And he's become family because he had to go back multiple times because of health issues or whatever. And so we think of that, you know, I think of that when I see you all. But then, so going to someone's house, you know, like my elderly father fell, hit his head, there's not really much threat for you walking into that. But you go into some situations, maybe where it's drug related or a gunshot or people fighting or whatever.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that's a different scenario for you to walk into. And you are in physical, you know, probably physical danger of trying to go in. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe how that, your mindset, how you deal with those things? And maybe a combative patient, right? That doesn't want help.
There are situations like that we have to worry about. You know, one of the biggest assets that we have is the person that's behind me that you guys can't see, but you talk to, and that's our emergency medical dispatchers.
Those guys
step in,
mm-hmm.
and they help us out so much because they have the questions they ask, and they assess those scenes, and they're listening to the scene. They can hear the screaming in the background of somebody, or, you know, they know, hey, I sent a truck there a couple of weeks ago and we had to send law enforcement. They're always watching out for us and trying to protect us. So if we're going to a place that, you know, is a little questionable, mm-hmm. or a situation where they're a little bit worried, they'll either stage us, say, hey, stage, wait for law enforcement, or they'll tell us, hey, watch yourselves. We're very blessed in Taney County.
We have a lot
of amazing equipment. We have an amazing ambulance district. And part of that amazing equipment is ballistic vest.
Mm-hmm.
So the ambulance district several years ago invested in ballistics vest for every single person. So you can't just go to Walmart and buy yourself a ballistics vest. These things are designed for each one of us. The company comes in, they measure us, and they build it and then send it to us, and it's designed to fit me. My vest won't fit you. Someone else's vest is not going to fit me. So it's designed to fit me correctly, protect me the best it can. And so we have that kind of equipment. And those dispatchers step in and tell us, hey, make sure you guys wear your vest on this call, you know, and they take care of us to make sure that we're protected. But sometimes things come up that you don't know. And so it's one of those you have to learn as you're working on the ambulance. As years go past, you learn, hey, always be watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I walk into someone's house, it doesn't matter if it's the sweet little grandma that needs help or someone that has an addiction problem. It doesn't matter. As soon as I walk in, the first thing I'm doing is assessing my scene.
Where did I come from?
How do I get back out there?
Yeah.
And where is my second point that I can get out of here if I need to?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm looking around. Is there guns laying around? Are there knives laying around? Is there a threat? A dog that's going to bite me? Which is usually not the giant German Shepherd. It's the little tiny one.
Of course it is.
It's the little tiny dogs.
Yes.
That think they weigh 900 pounds.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm glad you asked that question to Jonathan, because right now you're listening to this episode, everybody in the community is going, I had no idea. I mean, the fact that you mentioned that you all are fitted for ballistic vests as a community member, I had no idea. That's the first time I'm hearing about that. So that's why we do this. But, you know, you make a very good case of some scenarios. It's about as safe as it's going to be. But the variables and how you define them is really what is the unknown with every single case. And I would imagine there are some scenarios out there where there is inadvertent harm. And I just think about the person that has got onset dementia, or they've got Alzheimer's, and there is no intent there. But just by the progression of a disease, they're an inadvertent harm not only to themselves, but the environment that they're in. And you have to be on the lookout for that.
You do. You do. And you have to be very careful and very loving with those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because not only are they a threat to you, to me as a paramedic, they could be a threat to me.
Yeah.
But usually people that they're that progress with like dementia, they are an imminent threat to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And protecting them is something that we always try and do, and make sure that they're safe. They're not going to hurt themselves, you know, or someone else or us. But
yeah.
But absolutely, we deal with those situations all the time. The Alzheimer's, dementia, those are diseases that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy ever. They're horrible, horrible diseases. And I feel for everyone who has a family member that goes through something like that, or themselves. They really are terrible.
I had to go through it twice personally with my grandparents on my mother's side, and in the end it came down to hospice care. Yes. But the Alzheimer's progression, the dementia, I will say this to you, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I say it, but both of you, sundowners.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
There's no rhyme or reason behind it, but when somebody says sundowners to you, I can tell you it is the most bizarre and heartbreaking thing. Yes. That you can see in your family. It's literally when the sun sets, they can go from this persona and being sharp in certain things, and it's like somebody closing a blind. Mm-hmm. The lights go off, and what you saw earlier in the day is just gone. And it doesn't return again until morning.
Right.
And it's so scary. Jonathan, I want to kind of come back full circle, and I want to bring the community in, and I want really people to understand, for you and just your team members, in a typical day when things are at their busiest, what is a day like for you typically in service? When does it begin, and define for me a long day? What is a long day for you within the ambulance district?
So at TCAD, we respond to between 13 and 15,000 calls a year.
Oh, gosh.
We operate a variable number of ambulances. So at most we get up to 7 during the day.
Okay.
And then it drops down to 4 at night.
Okay.
During the middle of the night, it comes back up, you know, to 7 the next day. We work 12-hour shifts. So okay. We no longer work 24s. We were talking earlier in your show about, when I first started mm-hmm. on the ambulance, we worked 24-hour shifts. Oh. The idea of working a 24-hour shift now is just terrifying to me, because we run so many calls. We would never sleep if we did. So,
oh my gosh.
So we work 12-hour shifts. My particular shift is 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay. Okay. So
there is a 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. version of my shift. So
okay.
The night guys come in and hold down
the fort out.
At
yeah.
night for us.
Okay.
You know, busy days can be all kinds of stuff. There mm-hmm. are days we come in and, you know, yesterday I was on duty yesterday. We transported, I think, 4 patients okay. in 12 hours, which doesn't sound like a lot, but 2 of them we took to Springfield. So
your day can get filled.
Exactly.
Real fast.
It can fill up pretty quick. The day before that, me and my partner transported 7. We ran like
gosh.
Crazy, you know, and then there are some days that you come in and, you know, you take a transfer to St. Louis. So that pretty much takes up your whole shift if you're going to go to St. Louis.
8 hours. I mean, that is 8 hours of driving.
Absolutely. It's, by the time you pick up your patient here at Branson, mm-hmm. you drop them off at, Barnes or SSM Cardinal Glennon, one of those up in St. Louis. By the time you drop them off there and then get back, you're pretty much done with your 12-hour shift.
Oh, my
And it's, so it's an entire shift of driving.
Wow.
So our days, they change. It's something new every day. And that's one of the fun things about our job is we do get to do different things every day.
Pam, would you agree with me in saying for TCAD and any ambulance district out there that catches this episode with our very special guest, Jonathan Tudor, 24 hours to 12 hours. I am very, very glad that that part of the system has evolved because I can't imagine you take the pressures that are already there in the job. And there can be multiple of them, depending upon if you're going from 4 runs to 7 runs, or heaven forbid, there's more than that. Or, as my sister and I talk from time to time, you hear about shorthanded days or if somebody within the district is out sick, just as our job happens, if somebody's on vacation or somebody's out sick, the work gets shifted and things change a little bit, so you have to adapt. But boy, you talk about pressures and you talk about those long days. I don't know. I applaud anybody that came up from that time you got started under the 24-hour system to now. Just as a community member learning about it for the first time, Jonathan, I don't know how you guys did it. How do you deal with the pressure? If you're fatigued, there's variables of making you less sharp. Reaction time. I mean, there's just so much. It's unreal.
That's one of the reasons why the ambulance district pushed so hard to get us off of those 24-hour shifts is because there does come a significant danger with fatigue, and your mind just it's not as sharp if you've been awake that long. So we not only driving a 16,000-pound truck down the road
at
but
high
also,
speeds at times,
but also taking care of someone medically.
Yeah,
I make it a point to come to work well rested. I go to bed early the day before my shift because
I know that
when I come to work, I have someone's life in my hands. Someone is trusting me to take care of them or trusting me to take care of their family member, maybe their child. Yesterday I transported a 7-month-old. What other job? At the beginning of the podcast, we were talking about different things with our job. What other career can you go into that I can walk into an apartment and a mother hand me her 7-month-old child? She didn't know me, didn't know my name. She had seen me for less than 5 seconds.
And hands over.
And handed me her 7-month-old child to take care of. What an honor to be able to be that person that someone trusts that much to take care of that baby and to make sure that baby's going to be okay. And just so you know, the baby was fine. Everything was fine.
So you're making me tear up a little bit here. That story right there that people don't think of unless you're the mother having to hand your 7-month-old over to someone that you don't know. But that trust of I'm giving you my child and I'm trusting you to make sure my child's okay. And then the outcome is the child's okay. I'm sure that you are a superhero to that mom.
And Pam, Jonathan said a word, and when he said the word, it hit me here. And folks, you can't see what I'm doing right now, but I'm pointing to my heart. It tells me a good portion of what I need to know, but it says who Jonathan Tudor is in his service.
Right.
He talks about it being an honor. An honor. It takes the right person to say that and to react that way to a challenge and a very, very solemn responsibility to be able to take the life of a seven-month-old. It's in your hands.
Yes.
And you said honor. That is dang cool. If I can tell you that, that takes the right person to look at it that way.
Yes.
Really.
And Josh, in our previous programs that we've done, when we really peel back the layers to the hearts of the people that go out and do this frontline work, the emergency frontline workers, it's the calling. It's not just a job. anybody can just go do a job, but not just anybody can go do your job, because you have to have that heart, that compassion, that caring, that commitment to help other people. You can't pay somebody to do that. That's got to be something that's inside you, and you find this career that just brings that out. And I can see that on your face, because you almost got teared up just a couple of seconds ago when you were talking about that baby.
Yeah.
But that's the common thread that you and I continue to hear as we talk to, you know, the people from, you know, Liberty, the people that we talk, well, Ted Martin, you know, just that heart. And when we say the heart of the Emergency Worker Podcast, that's what we're really talking about, is your heart.
I don't
and
think you
why you do what you do.
Yeah. And I don't think you can create something like that.
Mm-mm.
You're born with it.
Yeah.
And in this particular job, and this is a compliment to you, and it's a compliment to everybody that is within the ambulance district. You talk about heart, yes. Compassion, yes. It's a rare thing in the field to have those two things. But then also, I'm going to add one more. Depending upon the situation, you got to have those two things, but you also got to have a resolve that is like steel. Because, boy, that's going to get tested. It's going to get tested in a variety of ways. 20 years, man, I can't. I could ask you and say, count how many times that resolve has been tested in your job. I have to think on it a bit, but I'm sure you'd be able to come around to a number. But just again, I can't fathom that. I mean, seven months old and handed into your arms and to the mother. That is it. That is the most precious thing.
Absolutely.
And the hardest thing that a mother will ever have to do. What I want to do, and Pam and I have done this through two episodes, and I've got to ask you this. Just want to ask about your family, your background. Are you married? Do you have kids right now?
Absolutely. I am. My wife actually runs the 911 center.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So, well, to her, I salute you as well.
Absolutely.
Jonathan, this is a fun question for us to ask, but, you know, you go out into the field and you work these shifts, 12 hours. How hard is it to go out on the course of a day, and how hard has it been for you? I mean, because I got to give your wife thanks. I got to give your kids thanks, because they're letting you go each day to go out there and put in those 12 hours. What is that like for you, just in the family dynamic, saying goodbye in the morning and then going out and working until 6 p.m.? That's a lot for them to do to say goodbye to you.
It is. And our families, the families of all the paramedics are incredibly important to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the ones that back us up, and they're the ones there for us. A lot of us, like my shift in the morning,
mm-hmm.
I'm gone by 5 a.m. from the house. Nobody's even awake when I leave.
Oh my gosh.
And by the time I get home at night, I live up near Springfield. So by the time I get home, it's 6:30, 7 o'clock. You know, I walk in the door and go straight to the table. It's dinner time.
Oh.
Because we eat dinner and then it's time to start shutting everything down.
Yeah.
You know, we got to get ready for school tomorrow. We got to get ready for work tomorrow. You know, so the days that I'm on, it's work and not a whole lot more.
How do you do it? And I've asked this question of anybody that's in the field that's working long days, right? It's two lives. Just as much as you have to get ready, get mentally ready, get into character, and then you're on the job. You come home, you walk through the door, you head to the table. Is it easier for you to transition into husband, dad, leave everything behind? And if it's not, what are the challenges like? I'd love to know.
You know, I would say, honestly, it really is, because usually by the end of the day, I'm done with being a paramedic today. Let's get out of it.
Yeah.
Let's let that go. And walking into the house and my little guy running up to give me a hug, best part of the day. It doesn't matter what happened.
Right on.
Doesn't matter what happened at work. Doesn't matter what kind of bad calls I ran,
mm-hmm.
or how many calls I ran, or how far I had to drive. None of that matters anymore, because now I'm home to my little guy and he's happy to see me.
Yeah.
And so that, that's where family comes in as one of our most important support mechanisms. Mm-hmm. is our families. We have to make sure we take care of them.
They are that reason that everything can just be washed away in an instant.
Absolutely.
And everything gets reset for it. See, that's cool. That's another aspect of right. why this is so awesome. Right. So, and Pam gave me a perfect setup, and I want to ask you about this because you probably have had this said to you. I'd be surprised if you haven't. A life that is saved. You're in those intimate moments. You're in the most vulnerable moment of anybody's life out there with calls that you take. Probably you've had people that have said, Jonathan, you're my hero. You saved my life. I would imagine that that's come up more than once. When somebody says that to you, that's why this series exists. We have a chance to share these stories, right? When you hear that word and somebody refers to you as a hero or uses that sentence, my friend, you hear that. What defines a hero? What do you think about that? And what is heroism in your job?
You know, it's really hard to define, and I've had people to thank me for what we do all the time. We have people, you know, pumping fuel at the gas station. Almost every day, someone will drive past us and come and go, hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That's cool.
I love that.
Never seen the person before. Thanks. We appreciate that. It feels awesome. It makes you feel good that, hey, you know, somebody's thinking of us.
Mm-hmm.
I've had patients come up to me afterwards, you know, especially your very severe patients, yeah. You know, your cardiac arrest survivors. Those are amazing to meet them afterwards. Most of our patients we don't get to see. We drop them off at the hospital and we're on to the next thing. And yeah. Rarely do we know the outcome. But seeing those patients a couple of days later, that is very rewarding. You know, you ask what is a hero? That's so hard to define. I don't consider myself or us as paramedics to be heroes. You know, I always grew up as the hero where your military guys that are protecting us every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the ones that are ready to jump at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you sit back and think about it, I guess paramedics do fall into that.
Oh, they do. I promise you, they do.
But it's
you
something that's just, I personally don't ever consider it.
Yeah.
It's my career. This is my career. This is what I chose to do. And I think there's a little bit of hero in everybody, you know, because, you know, if you're sitting at your house when the storm comes, the guy behind the microphone at the radio station that's telling you the emergency alert
system. Get to
system,
the basement.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's pushing the button to make the emergency alert system go off. He's a pretty big hero that day.
Yeah.
You can save a lot of lives. You know, so there's a hero in everyone. You know, if you're the person that needs the car, that really needs a car to get to work, and you go to the bank and talk to the bank lady, and she's able to get you that loan, you're a pretty big hero that day. Because you got the car, you're able to go to work, you're able to support your family. You know, I think there's a little bit of hero in everybody. And just to make,
I love it.
To make us, you know, to make me feel, oh yeah, you know, paramedics are heroes. It's very hard for me to feel that way.
Because you're humble and it goes back to your heart, Jonathan, because you guys are, and you make a difference every single day. But to you, hey, I'm just doing my job, right? That's what makes a hero, because you're not doing it for the glory. You're not doing it for the praise or whatever. You're doing it because it's the right thing. It's in your heart and you want to help. And to me, that's the definition of a hero. Someone that goes out of their way to help someone else in their moment of need.
You couldn't frame it. You couldn't frame it any better of seeing a hero in everybody.
Yes.
It's in the small acts. It goes all the way up from the small acts to the major acts. And honestly, seeing a bit of a hero in anybody that's out there, that's a pretty awesome model. That's a good way.
It's
that's a good
outlook.
Way to behave.
Yes.
That's a good way to act. You know, you brought up the person that is the first one maybe to give you a loan, give you an opportunity, a chance to change your life, open up a small business, whatever it is. That person could be a hero to somebody. You mentioned the EAS. You know, I oftentimes, just like you, when I'm doing severe weather and I'm doing wall-to-wall coverage in this studio and I'm behind the mic for 2 hours and I'm tracking tornadoes, multiple storm cells, you know, I'm not thinking about that at the moment. But if I inadvertently protect life and property in any area county or get somebody into a shelter because they heard me talking about it before a storm passes over and I keep one person safe, even if I don't hear about it on the other side, then I can take comfort in the fact that I did something good and that I am doing something good when I'm on the radio. So I feel that, and that's awesome that you frame that way. It's a very cool way to look at it.
So I look at it as, you know, these big things that people think of as being like a hero. You've gone out and you've just done something like to save the entire country or whatever. How many opportunities do everyday ordinary people get to be that kind of hero? And to me, you brought it back very local, very granular. We all have an opportunity to be a little bit of a hero every single day. So I think we should make a conscious effort to think about how can I be someone's hero today, right?
Yeah.
And it's just the little things. It's, you know, you don't have to go do it, you know, jump out of a plane or anything like that. You can just, it's acts of kindness and compassion and caring, right?
I think about thinking about helping my friend who's just down the hallway working, thinking about tomorrow when I'm taking her up to Springfield to go shopping for a car. She doesn't have any other way to get up there. And I'm like, I'll take you. That's doing the little things. That's being a good community steward. I want to pivot a little bit, and I've done this with each one of the guests, and Pam probably knows where I'm going to go with this, but to help the community understand how Jonathan and his team are tested, some of our prior guests, Jonathan, brought up some of the biggest challenges that they have had in their lives and their career, especially being out in the field, whether it is fire, restoring power, working under harsh conditions. Our last guests, the line foreman and the managers within Liberty Utilities, brought up a very unique incident about what their most challenging day is, and talking about the worst day in the field. And again, you know, talking about sleepless nights and things that you have seen in your life that would make any one of us not sleep. I can't even imagine that at any point. But I have to ask, just rounding it out in your career, if you could define it for us, what has been the biggest challenge within the ambulance district for you personally that has really, really tested you? Some of the guys especially went back in time in reference being responding to the Joplin tornado. I think about the duck boat tragedy, and I remember very well before that all went down, I was here that day and I was tracking that storm cell and reminding everybody to get away from the water, stay off the water. And what came in the aftermath of that was just horrible, because you're here and you're trying to do your job and you're trying to warn, pre-plan and keep everybody safe. And then we know where the stories went after the fact. But looking at your field, my friend, just to be very real, what has been the biggest challenge for you personally so far to this point in your career?
I'm not sure I could pin down a single call that is the most challenging thing I've done. On average, I transport about 600 patients a year.
Oh my gosh.
Gone back and looked at the numbers, and on average, I'm around 600 to 700, give or take. So it's hard to remember one call. You know, what's that one call? But there are some that stick out. So me and my partner were the first ambulance onto the strip in Branson after the Branson tornado happened.
Mm.
And I remember the supervisor say we were responding to a call up in Branson. Of course, the 911 system was going crazy that night.
Uh-huh.
We were responding to a call, and we told dispatch, we can't get to it. You're going to have to send somebody else. And our dispatch, they're like, why can't you get there? Or the supervisor, he's like, what's wrong? Why can't you guys get there? And I told him, I was like, Mazio's is in the middle of the road. And he asked me, he said, what resources are we going to need? I'm like, all of them. The National Guard, all of them. Send them all. And that was the day that he realized, and dispatch realized, ooh, hold on, this actually just happened. You know, so I remember that call. You know, I was sitting in the board meeting at the ambulance district when the duck boat happened.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, we staffed our trucks pretty quickly. obviously we had the trucks on duty already.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
everybody that was off duty, we started jumping on trucks to be able to keep going. One of the things that a lot of people that's not involved in emergency services don't think about, when you have something like the duck boat happen, mm-hmm. that's a very tragic event and attracts a lot of media attention. Everybody remembers that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The rest of the community, we cover 640 square miles. The other 639 yeah. square miles still
so
need an
glad.
Ambulance.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up.
That night, and a lot of people, you know, we haven't really advertised it because there's no reason to advertise it, but not only did we have that tragedy, there's a silver lining in it. During the duck boat tragedy, we had a cardiac arrest save that same night. That person is still walking around here in Branson because the paramedics kept going. The duck boat was horrible. That was a terrible tragedy, and it hurt several of our medics. And to this day, it still hurts a lot of them. But there's a silver lining that it doesn't matter how bad it was. Someone else needs us, and let's go. Let's go take care of them. And we did. And not only did we take care of them, we had a cardiac arrest save out of it, and that person's walking around because of it.
See, that is so remarkable to me. And it, again, you don't you have to make this a multi-part series. And if you're listening to this, and I would just tell you, nominate your fellow ambulance district members, because everybody has got stories. And I could ask Jonathan a ton of questions, and my mind still is not going to be able to grasp how the will comes together, Pam, how the will comes mm-hmm. together, because to see that, to process it, you're still processing it. It's still in your mind, but you got to go from here and you got to go over here and take care of this cardiac arrest and save a life and not miss a beat. Jonathan, I'll tell you, my mind is never going to be able to grasp how that's done, because that's why I say, and I can't say it enough, it takes a special person. Heart, compassion, will, steel resolve to do that.
I agree. I mean, it's not for everyone. Again, it's a calling. And again, just I hope if anyone listening gets anything out of this, it's just looking at, you know, we all see the obvious, but here's all the things that go into your day. Here's all the things that you have to deal with after your day, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And hopefully we'll be more supportive. There'll be more people going by when you're pumping gas and saying thank you, right?
I hope. I really
just
do.
Little acts of kindness, because that's really what we want from here, is for people to understand the whole story of you all on the front line. And to have a little more gratitude and a little more appreciation for what you have to go through. And it's just been such a blessing for me to get to see this other side and to do this with one of my favorite people, Josh. And it's just wonderful. So I would just encourage you, you know, listen to every podcast, because it's almost like it's a connecting story from one to the next. It's really been, it's really just started here and then building on it and then building on it again. And so listen to all of them and you'll learn some great things about some of our amazing people here in this community.
Folks, you're listening to our very special guest, Jonathan Tudor, representing Taney County Ambulance District, and doing a remarkable job in he'll appreciate me saying this, a relatively young career, two decades in at this point, and here's to many, many more successful years before he moves on to the next big thing in his life. But to everybody listening out there to this episode, everybody that's in the Ambulance District, no matter what county you're in, across the country especially, we see you. We recognize you. That's why we do this. That's why we tell these stories, because the way Jonathan framed it up, you have got a very valuable inside look into what life is like within the ambulance district, the trials, the challenges, what it takes to get through the day, and to the wonderful men, women, and children behind these amazing personnel. We cannot say thank you enough for letting your people go, making that decision to serve within the ambulance district, but contending with long days, long nights, sometimes multi-days, and just helping them come to grips with any challenges and trauma that may come home, because I will still be coming to grips with this interview for a while, trying to really frame up and really try to understand perfectly how it's done. But, you know, I think there's something special in there, and you just need to leave it at that. There's something special that resides within everybody in the ambulance district to get this job done. Jonathan, you know, I look at the town as it is, and Branson's such a wonderful place to be. And Pam has heard me say this before, that we're blessed to be in this particular area because we are surrounded by community members that have a great philanthropic and charitable heart. We take care of each other in Ozark Mountain Country. Even if it's in the district or outside the district, I go back to that, the way you framed it up about being an everyday hero, even in the small things. We're blessed to be in this area because we've got organizations that exude that. Taking a look at the future, you know, we take a look at growth and you can kind of sensationalize it and think about the whole Hollywood magic about starting out and seeing people in ambulances and movies and taking a bit of inspiration there. When things get busy and you've got 7 calls or more and you're dealing with tragedy and you've got to be where you're at and you've got to go in and attempt to save a life, you look to the future. It's got to be exciting just from a challenge perspective, because we know Branson is never going to stay small. We're always growing by leaps and bounds and the population continues to rise. What do you think about the growth of the Branson area and where it can go over the years and how TCAD fits into that and how you will rise to meet that challenge as the town continues to grow?
I think we're set up very well to continue to grow. We've proven that we can grow, and I believe we'll continue that way. The ambulance district operates off of a sales tax, as you know, as the sales and stuff in the county continue to grow. Hopefully our revenue will keep up with it to the point that we can continue to be able to pay our personnel and add trucks if we need to.
Yeah.
We're very blessed at TCAD to have a management team that is prepared and is always looking forward. So every year we have strategic planning, and the strategic plan is not for today or tomorrow. It's 5, 10, and 15-year strategic plans of
that's awesome.
Where we're going, how we're going to get there, what we need to do now to prepare for it. So we're always thinking ahead, and the growth of Branson, the growth of the area, we're preparing for that, so that when it does happen, we can meet those future needs.
Fun question for you as we bring this episode to a close with Jonathan Tudor. This is the fun. I mean, it's all been fun and it's been absolutely amazing. I think I probably want to have Jonathan back for at least 20, 25 episodes at least, because he's just been such an amazing guy to talk to. Here's the fun part for you, my friend. Go back in time a little bit. Somebody out there that's got that right attitude, that right acumen, that right drive to get into the ambulance district and serve. That 20-year-old that gets started in the business of service there, what would you most want to say to that individual, man or woman, that would be of encouragement to them to get into ambulance service and working within the district? What would you most want to tell them to encourage them to start that career?
You know, one of the most important things that I talk to our new hires when they come along, and what is that big picture is. Keep your eye on the goal. Keep your eye on that big picture. And there may be days that you take a lot of calls or you take the calls that are not so fun, but the sun's going to come up tomorrow. And keep your eye on that big picture. You know? And just like we were talking with the duck boat, keep your eye on the big picture, because the big picture is we're always there. And if you call 911, we're going to show up. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's raining. Doesn't matter if it's sunny. Doesn't matter if it's snow. It might take us a little while to get there, but we're coming. And we're going to take care of the problem. We're coming. So as a young person getting into EMS, you know, becoming a paramedic, it's keep your eye on that goal. Remember why we're here. We're here for the community. We're here for that patient that calls in their most desperate hour. Whether we think it's a big emergency or not, it doesn't matter, because it's their most desperate hour. And so keep your eye on that goal. Make sure that you wake up in the morning and refresh your mind and be prepared to come in and take care of someone no matter what. You know, whether you're having a bad day or not, doesn't matter, because it's not about you. It's about the community that we serve. And we're public servants. Most important word there, servants. We're here to serve our community. We're there no matter what. You call us and we're coming to help. So that's the thing is remember that. Every day of your career, remember that. And everybody's allowed to have a bad day, but still remember the big goal. Remember, you're here for the community. Get out there and take care of them.
Love that.
If you were to put that on a card or letterhead, Pam, I can look at you and I can simply say this. Everyone that is most important to me, my family, my social circle, I can take comfort in the fact that knowing when that time comes, they're going to be in the best of hands.
Yes.
And the best of hands lies within Taney County Ambulance District.
Absolutely. Well said, Josh.
Oh, see, well, Jonathan's inspired me throughout this entire conversation. Pam, I'd be remiss. Again, Jonathan Tudor, special thanks to you. Thank you for making this a wonderful episode 3 in this continuing explorative series for the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast. Pam, my dear, you know, when we do these, we're on the hunt for inspiration every single day. We are on that search for the next great story.
Mm-hmm.
Heroics, how that's defined, and how we serve and make our community better. For nominations, this series is presented and it is made in part. Thank you to RVS Bank, Pam Yancey, and her team. If you would like to nominate, share a story. Jonathan's going to take this with him. He'll be thinking of some people that we can spotlight as well. There is a nomination form right on the main page for the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast at BransonPodcastNetwork.com. I'm going to say it every time. You're going to get tired of me saying this, but I could not think of a better host. Thanks for letting me be a part of this and be able to tell these stories. Jonathan did an excellent job.
He did.
And we hope
I wouldn't do this with anybody else but you, Josh. So.
See, she makes me feel good. You know, I can't wait for episode 4 and all the episodes on the other side. This really is a delight. It's important what we do, and these stories deserve to be told.
So they do deserve it, because people need to know. They need to know. It just looks so easy, right? Y'all just make it look easy. But it's not. It's a lot of effort, a lot of training, a lot of emotional health that you've got to, seek. And so we just couldn't thank you enough, Jonathan, for coming and representing the ambulance district so well. And we know we're in good hands with you guys over there.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
It is really, really special, folks. Just to sum up, I would simply say, remember Jonathan's words. Remember his work day. Remember what his family has to give up when they say goodbye in the morning, oftentimes not seeing each other, 12-hour days, going from 24-hour shifts to 12-hour shifts, the rotation, 4 calls, 7 calls, sometimes more, tragedy of the darkest kind, and sometimes light, and then what comes back on the other side. There's a lot to the story. Listen, learn, educate, respect, appreciate, gratitude. It all goes hand in hand. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, Branson Podcast Network, and our special guest, Jonathan Tudor, Taney County Ambulance District.